friendships, friendships. And it is a hard journey. But I think one of the reasons I think we have a good one here is because the value that adds to the job. The things that we see on TV, social media, and public are 35-minute clips of a 24/7, four-year contract to be a civic, to do your civic duty. And so I do want to give a lot of credit to kind of what goes on behind the scenes. And that is part of what I think makes Justin so special, is that the hard work and the work ethic is the foundation of what would make a great alderman. I believe we will see in the coming months, there's something that I've seen in the two aldermen that I work for. It's not that they wanted to necessarily, it's that they felt the need to do this. And for anyone who's felt it, it is a deep driving emotion that sometimes is not logical. It is not necessarily easy. It is not something that you can say to people and have them understand why, but it drives you. And the successful alders in the past, current, and future, I think have all had that feeling. And so I want to thank all of you for being here to support. I thank you for grabbing the mantle and doing it. But I'm very proud. I'm very, very proud to stand here in support of Justin, who I think is embodies this neighborhood just as much as any of us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Wait. Let's give a hug. I told you I knew him, but we didn't.
So how are we doing? Are we okay? You're fine with this background? You can hear plenty okay, yeah? Okay. Before this, and me and Adam were texting, and he said yes, how I was feeling, which is always the question I think we always open up with. How are you feeling?
Yeah.
How are you feeling today? Good? You're nervous? You know what? And I said, oh, I'm good, but the only thing I'm worried about is I don't know if people want to listen to me talk for an hour. And you said, oh, no. Hedge water people liked it, and they liked it. The verse. It needs to be a dialogue.
Yeah.
So, Sean, you know, I'm sorry for my office. I used to give it fast. I can talk for 2 hours. So what I'll do is I'll just say some words about why we're all here. How we got here, who I am, why this is the right move for me. And I think I won't talk about then the campaign priorities, which I thought about doing, but I'll take that as a Q&A instead. I think all the material will come out in the questions and answer anyway. I don't have to lecture about it. So, good? Sounds good? I was thinking about how to frame myself to all of you. And I was having a conversation with one of our neighbors who's not so civically involved and unfortunately couldn't make it today. I just got a snapshot. He's doing some boating. An accident on the boat. But he gave me a frame, and I want to use that frame to talk about my story. And we were sitting at Solar Intentions talking about design. We both have a design background in this neighborhood. And we were thinking about what it means to be a designer, like a technician, someone who's designing things. And he gave me this frame. He said, it sounds to me, Justin, like the journey you're going on is from a lowercase d to an uppercase d. And so, okay, let's play with that. Let's play with that frame. What are you saying here? You would say that this lowercase d might be embodied by things like graphic design, visual design, fashion design, architecture, urban design, these trades, right? And those are things that I was always interested in for most of my life, these very aesthetic, visual, design realms. And you could say that story for me reached its pinnacle when I was invited to come to Denmark. As most of you know, I've spent 10 years in Denmark to design for one of the biggest design agencies, I think, in the world. You probably say that. You think design, you probably think Apple, Maybe you think Bugatti if you're into cars, or if you're into fashion, you've got design, you've got your top designer, right? I work for Lego, the toy company, which you probably also think somewhere on that list, the top 10. Okay. Very iconic design, right? So I entered Lego as a graphic designer. Just the grunt, doing the actual design, product design, designing figures, designing the worlds with those figures in the field. But you can imagine being on a design team around a bunch of designers. We're not very attuned to system design. Designing good meetings, designing good interactions with people. That's a different skill set, right? And I think that my directors, my managers, quickly saw that I had an affinity for where this story goes next, which is this capital, right? So I'll just give one example of something kind of prestigious I did, and when I look back and even in the moment, I knew that I made it. Like, I kind of had that moment. So it's going to require me to tell a little bit of a story to all this, but I think it's worth it. So you can imagine a growing company like Lego, with an expanding product line and developing products with more specific, unique elements in the store. Elements that require some hand labor, manual labor. And as we all know, manual labor is not that cheap in Europe. So they got involved in manufacturing. They bought three factories out here. And the way things worked originally when they bought these is that we just had product briefs out there, and we got product back. Great business. We were earning money, right? But at some point, the leadership of Lego understood that, well, we got to fine-tune this a bit more, right? What's going on out there? We don't have to have a clue what's going on behind those closed doors. We're making money. It's all good. Maybe we should send somebody out there who has an affinity for design, but also has an affinity, can understand and diagnose systems more generally. So they flew me out there for a couple weeks at a time. My first project was just to document what was happening out there. Second was to identify where value was being lost in the chain, to do a value stream map. And thirdly was to make recommendations for improvement if there were some. So that's what I did. And here's that moment where I made it in life. I was standing in a tower in Hong Kong on the 40th floor, presenting to a group probably this size, all Chinese people, laying out my big map, making proposals to organizational changes on how to capture value better, creation of new departments would have to be done. Not anyone had to fire. He had to hire some people. Basically, building up a new team. Right, to do things more efficiently. And that's when I thought about telling the story, I should say, it's not to say anything bad about the Chinese, but we had two teams, right? Chinese and Europe. These two teams were really strong. So this project that I was on was to get people talking together. Very different backgrounds, right? So that's what we did. We did everything I suggested. And at that point, I realized I'm doing the big design. I'm designing a framework where people feel comfortable to come in, listen, speak freely, start with how it feels. This process isn't working, just whatever, however the dialogue. But setting up a good foundation, So, here's where we start to get. That's the lowercase, capitalcase, story. But in this time, this was probably 2019, so in there, something else is happening. There's all this internal stuff going on. Lego, I'm having a great career, making a lot of money in the process. Things were going great. I was comfortable in middle class lifestyle. But some of those not so much, right? In 2017, I'm sure we can all do a test, it felt like something different was happening. Right? Yeah? Mm-hmm. I heard a yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Good. All right.
So if you look back to 2017, what was happening, right? There was this thing called post-truth. It was a media frenzy. Everyone was freaking out, right? And rightfully so, because truth is foundational to our democracy. It's going to get a bit philosophical right now, right? But I mean, if we don't have truth, our courts don't work. You know, if we're not speaking honestly to our elected officials, it's breaking down in neighborhoods. I mean, this is a currency. This is a piece of currency that we need to function, right? And it appeared that, well, truth, we couldn't listen to the media anymore. They were biased. On social media, we couldn't trust that. Everyone was in their own little echo chambers, right? Every little community has their own truth, their own things of value, things that are sacred, taboo. You don't mention this, you champion this, you champion these people's stories, you champion these people's stories. Very complicated environment, right? Also, I'm sure it would be guessed over here, Donald Trump was elected to the first presidency, right? It's also kind of indicative of what was going on then. And me, sitting across the pond, as it's called, over in Denmark, only getting the worst of the news, it looks like this whole thing is falling apart. And I thought, I've developed skills, I've put myself through challenges. I'm now running a team, after all that AIDS stuff. I'm a team design manager at that point, was running a team of 17 reportees at one time. So I've got some soft skills, I've got some hard skills. I've been reading some philosophy on the side. And I thought, I think the real value that we see in this world is not, or at least my piece in this puzzle is not a good thing. I need to come back, I need to get involved in community development, community organizing, politics, I don't know, government. It was very amorphous at the time, but I knew that the private sphere, basically, sorry, the public sphere, is where value needs to be. So I talked to my wife, we came back, I came back, she moved to Russia. And when we first moved to Chicago, we had an Airbnb in Bronzeville. We didn't know where we wanted to settle. All the trendy or up-and-coming neighborhoods, you know, as we usually talked about. We chose Edgewater, eventually, after a few months of exploring, because of its historic beauty and natural beauty. And as I came to realize later, having spoken to this, kind of the social fabric, the social beauty behind all of that. So, very happy with that choice. Very happy that each one of you I've met along this way. I have some new faces. And I'm very happy that it's led up to this. I guess I'll say just a few things I've done in the community. And then instead of going to the campaign priorities, which I've got some written material over here, you're welcome to read. But I think, again, that can just come out of the Q&A. So what have I done since being an Edgewater? I think one of the first things, Shane, I'll point to you. Shane, we did some philosophy ceiloning together. You heard about my background and, like, again, the technical design side of things. You also heard my affinity for the big picture ideas. Shane is the senior manager of research at the Government Finance Officers Association, and he wanted to utilize me for making the report work that you do just more palatable, basically. At LEGO, we call them one pages. Basically, you want me to make a one-pager, very visual-oriented narrative text where public finance officers employed in local governments can digest this stuff easier without having to read a 10, 20, 30-page report, right?
Yes, exactly.
So, very happy with that I made that connection. Thank you, Shane.
My pleasure.
It opened my eye to local government. It's not just finance, although that is the membership, is finance officers. The way you sold it to me, I can sell to this crowd. Basically, a local government think tank. We want to think about making local government better. Sure, I want to. I'm sure I want to think about how this is working. A lot of the initiatives are rethinking. Rethink this, rethink that. Everything's branded as rethink. Perfect. That's exactly the narrative I think is correct. In this changing environment that I've said in 2017, right?
Was there a joke?
I said a lot of input. Input to you. The think tank.
Yeah.
What it would want.
Yes. As far as volunteering in the community, there was an opening, I call it an opening, at the Edgewater Beach Neighborhood Association. It was being run by a woman named Killian Walsh. She's now in St. Louis. But together with her and Roxanne Volkman, if you remember her from the last aldermanic election cycle she ran, together with Brian over here. And I said, Joe Dunn said he was going to come today, but he's not here. Okay. So, anyway, I really had an affinity for Brian and Roxanne for whatever reason. There were reasons for us to really jive. And we then, again, meet Killian and Roxanne, took the reins up on that Rugby Neighborhood Association. We did some good projects, just quickly, a lot of talk on the liquor moratoriums, how does the community feel about that. We organized really successful sessions on that. Zoning talks, I learned a lot about how zoning was handled in Chicago through those green discussions. Mm-hmm. TRB, Don, if I call it here, yeah. We very recently, this last spring, through Edgewater Beach River Association, was invited Todd and Mario Clements, some Chicago-based architects.
Yeah,
yes.
That was great.
Excellent. You guys were there, right?
Yes.
And man, were the neighbors really excited. It was so nice to see so much smile on their face. I think it was Renee Patton from the Edgewater Environmental Board. You could see it in her face. She's like, these are Norman thoughts and passions and ideas and things I want to see for later. They were just lying dormant. And you could see it all the surface.
Great experience.
So we've had some success with that program. I also helped plan the park over here at 559, the community garden. I did some layout work over there. Helped gardening over there. Gardening, recently did some veg water stuff. There's a path at the veg water on the north end along the building there. I was out there with a couple of the neighbors. We were just laying the gravel work down, so if you walk that path, you can have this story now. That was a lot of fun. Can you hand me that, Adam? I got my resume. What else have I done? Edgewater Coalition of Rock Club has been involved in those conversations. That's where I met a lot of you. Edgewater Environmental Coalition, I mentioned. Recent members of the Historical Society, I think I wrote one article for them. This is important, the CATS meeting, Chicago Alternative Music Strategy. I was facilitator of the BEAT meeting. What might be last year, all of last year. Thomas Robbs, you know, he's got taken over. I'm going to do this. And the Bryn Mawr, the Bryn Mawr Alliance Task Force. You did a great job of formulating a Colonian community, passionate community people. You asked me to do the community outreach, had that task force. We had a great time. Very, indebted to the conversations we had and felt like I got a lot out of that. Unfortunately, I don't think the current administration saw the value we were adding. Very unfortunately. There's a lot of talent in this neighborhood, a lot of expertise. And Todd had convened that.
And sustainability, the effort that we started with sustainability.
Oh yeah, there's the Loyola stuff. Yeah, recently I've actually put in a request for Loyola for some student resource. Thanks, Mark. This is getting a bit into the campaign priorities, but it's worth speaking to. With the recent rezone of Broadway, the completion of red line stations, under the L activation, there's a lot of opportunity over there. But rezoning is just, the way I frame it, is just giving permission to developers, right? It's not incentivizing the type of development that we want to see in the neighborhood. And it, you could argue, there's going to be some opponents to the statement, but the Democratic flex in that process wasn't there. Again, that local talent was not, in my opinion, brought to the table for that. So the question that I had, talking about the state's sustainability, together with the Edgewater Environmental Coalition, Renee over there again. Was what policy do we have in place? Do we have the right policy that's going to now build the neighborhood that we want? Or have we just given permission to developers? and handed over any safeguards, any public safeguards. As part of that, I met with Loyola to ask for student resource to start a, what was I framing it as? After-action report of the 2010 Edgewater Sustainability Plan put together by the Edgewater EEC. Edgewater
Environmental.
ECC. Sorry, Edgewater Community Council.
Edgewater Community Council.
ECC. Sorry. Yeah. Those two acronyms are
right,
very close.
Right.
I think that was maybe one of the last efforts ECC did, was this 2010 Sustainability Plan. I would do an after-action review of that. What was accomplished? What did we learn? What were the obstacles, pitfalls, and what remains outstanding? Have we made it? That would be the start. And then, of course, where do we want to build from here? Is it policy? Is it just cultural? Is it how we approach developers, how we approach the city? There could be a lot of avenues. I don't have the answers. But that would be a good framework. So. I haven't heard back from our professor friend, but I have invited the dean for the School of Environmental Sustainability over to Park 559. Melissa, the lead of that park, is very into wetlands restoration. The dean of the school is that's kind of the background is in wetlands restoration. So hopefully that site gets into something. I'm pretty positive. I think that's it.
Yeah, I spent time with Tom, architect Tom.
Oh yeah, Tom, yeah, right. Yeah, Tom is in, he's at a wedding in Detroit right now, or in Michigan somewhere. But yeah, that's, when I met Tom was the last 4 miles discussion. You invited us up here to the cafe that's no longer there. Loyola Bulldogs did.
Archie's.
That was a great time. Me and Tom don't always agree on vision. But that's not necessary.
That's okay.
Yeah. Good?
I don't think I want to ask. Is that when they were doing the cleanup, you were there cleaning up. You were there picking up cigarette butts, picking up trash.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't there because you were the leader of this. You were there just actually doing the grunt work, and I think that's also important to say.
Thanks, Arnell. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was part of the Edgewater Beach Neighbor Association. We did those neighborhood cleanups. Those are great. Because when you're out there cleaning up, and people come by and they just, you know, honk or they signal. I mean, they appreciate it. You can see neighbors are, and now I return them. If I see somebody cleaning up, I always, you know, thank you. I did it just on the walk up here. Thanks for helping. You know, so it's a good experience. Good? Okay. Here's where I was going to go into all the platitudes about what my campaign is based on. Dignity, number one. But I could instead, I know some people have brought some questions. Let's make this more interactive. Yeah, actually, could you circulate those out? Because if people, that might trigger something. Maybe someone has a question. Right? Based on what I heard.
The things I was thinking about,
what is that? Neighborhood.
So you were mentioning a couple of groups, right?
Yes.
And I don't know about the neighborhood groups here, but it seems to be popular all over the place. I was at the May Day event downtown there, and there was the Communist Party of America, there's Communist USA, and there's the Democratic Socialists, and then there was the Alternative Socialists. And, you know, remember that scene in Life of Brian? Judea is people's front, and the people's front is Judea, whatever. It seems like there are a lot of faction groups that all have a few people that are interested in something similar. So, you know, how do you get all these people to, you know, get past those small differences to bring together and have more of a neighborhood partnership network type of thing? Like, the people find differences quicker than they might agree.
It's something I thought a lot about. And when I was coming into this neighborhood, it was hard to navigate. Honestly, hard to navigate all the different groups. I wanted to find a place. I wanted to get activated. I wanted to help, right? But I didn't know how, because it's kind of like a Venn diagram. It's kind of complicated, right? So I think that the ward office, the 48th ward office, has a unique opportunity to serve as like a glue of the community. Or it can, in the worst case, be the opposite, in the divided neighborhood. And,
not pointing any names right now.
Yeah, yeah. If it's run poorly, you see some division. You. Spoil it. No, but I have been at the 48th Ward office sometimes where a conversation is happening, and I'm like, what is going on? The conversation is breaking down. If I was over there like helping facilitate, navigate these stakeholders, I don't know, a bit of arrogance, I guess, to say this, but like it would go so much smoother. Like we just need, it takes some hard skills sometimes to help navigate a situation like that.
Some hard stuff. That's yes, not arrogance. That's you selling yourself.
That's your humble thing. By calling out anyone who might suspect arrogance.
I'm hell yeah. When you talk about progressivism 2.0,
yeah,
can you help define what was the limits or flaws of progressivism 1.0 as you would define it, and how are you different?
For people who don't know what Angel,
sorry, if it's okay to use your name,
what you're referring to, after studying the some data, looking at past election results in the ward, I determined that progressive values are correct for this neighborhood in order to achieve its what needs to happen here. At the same time, I think progressivism is it's very, it comes along as, what do you call that? It's tainted. It comes along with a lot of baggage, right? So in order to champion what I saw as needed in the ward, I thought progressivism is the right label, but it also needed to detach itself from progressivism we've seen.
Can you define progressivism?
I will. Yes. I just wanted to give the backdrop for people who haven't read it.
Okay.
Not everyone. So progressivism 2.0 is a flagship marketing that I'm using under this campaign. So I think when I think of American progressivism, I can go all the way back to the 1920s, right? That progressive wave was very interested in trust. Antitrust laws came out of that, right? That went for both business and government. There's a lack of trust. Maybe we have the same problem now, right? There was also a need for democratic, increasing democratic inclusion, making it including more people in the process. So there was a suffrage movement part of that, expanding voting rights, basically. I think that that's probably a correct critique that the current progressive wave is still interested in. They talk about accessibility, self-selection as a problem, like those who have a luxury to participate in democracy, get to participate, and those who are busy, maybe they're a single mom, maybe they're a different story, they don't have the luxury. So I think all of that is correct, still today. Where I think it's gone wrong and why it needs a new branding of 2.0 is because it's very much tied up, in my opinion, and what I would say, to this activism. Kind of down with a man. You mentioned some socialists over here. This is kind of the flavor of it, right? It's very activist-driven. And I think when you then elect those activists into legislator or executive roles, there's a mismatch of profile. You're no longer, you know, saying, fuck the man. You actually have to do the work, right? And I think there were 16 seats in city council that changed over last municipal election, 2023. And here in this ward, the mayor, ward south of here in the 46, were, I think, part of this wave of progressivism, very activist. Do I think that they've done a successful job of translating to the new role? I think that's the question. What's that?
What's 2.0 then?
2.0 then, thank you.
You're good.
Is making that progressive agenda actually manageable in an administrative type of way. So I think if you read the booklet, strengthening, I talked about the glue of the community, that would be part of it. We don't have to fight each other anymore like a socialist or a down with a man progressive has to do. Now we need to listen to people's voices, coalesce that and make that work. So it's very much an administrative type of move to the same value. Yeah, if you really want me to get into the campaign priorities, I guess you could talk about the welfare, social welfare programming. Again, I live in Denmark. I saw what that type of assistance can do. You know, for all the championing of like individual liberty we do in the United States, I felt more individually liberated in Denmark than any time in my life here in America. And I think that that was because of the trust. I didn't have to worry about a doctor that was given to me, you know, all this infrastructure, social. You can frame it very economically, but really I would make a profit from that. It was really a social infrastructure where people are helping. They helped me anyways to grow into who I am today. So yeah, there is something with that. But again, it has to work.
Sounds like you want to raise my taxes, and
I talk about that there. I talk about both rent, because Joe, Joe didn't come, but I talked to him, he's been kind of coaching me. He said, Justin, you're going to have to figure out how you feel about things like rent control, property tax, right? Things like that. So I think both of those need to be managed. And I know rent control officially is not allowed by the state of Illinois. At the same time, I'm a renter. If my rent jumped 10%, that would be substantial, right? So I am interested in kind of stabilizing both of those costs, both the property and rent. But I think to do so, the city's going to have to figure out how to compensate for the revenue loss, or even just degradating buildings. How do we make it ADA compliant? You know, buildings built 100 years ago or not. Sustainability, energy standards are changing, right? How are we going to update those? And just general wear and tear on the buildings. So I think that there's something there.
Yeah, it's not a question. This is really a statement. I think because I talk to so many people here, I think we're really, really fearful that Lenny could get back. And she could pull the same thing that Jane Byrne did years ago when she was running for mayor, fighting each other, they lost and she walked in and the mayor. And I think that there are so many people like yourself, and you really should be at the top of my list. They're really good people, really knowledgeable, and that we need those people to work together. And I know what we're doing, we're gonna have you, and we're gonna find somebody else who's really good and somebody else who's really good. Isn't there a way that you could get these people and maybe do some debates and then pick out the strongest ones and come up with the best answers? Because the really answer isn't about the person. It's about getting this neighborhood turned around. I mean, it's horrible. And I'm afraid that we're going to find some very eligible people, very, very smart people. I thought Joe Dunham, I would have loved to see him. Yeah. But we need to work together and pick out the best people. And the best people need to pick out the best person. Somehow, there must be a way that we can work together against one person than to be divided against one person.
I thought a lot about what you said. If we wanted to have a neighborhood thought that that was a shared sentiment and wanted to have like a mock debate, what is it called, Brian? You know the word.
Plebiscite,
yeah. Where we need to be more unified against the incumbent. She's now the incumbent, right? There's going to be a lot of investment into her. Not getting too conspiratorial, but if you just, rezone Broadway, maybe she develop money coming in there. Corporate development, not private landowners, probably. But yeah, that's a real concern. I would, I don't know, Adam, can I? Is it okay? Well, when we were talking, whatever I want, my permission. When me and Adam were talking for over the years that you talked about, we didn't know who should run.
Yes.
Adam, you had interest. Yeah? Can I say that?
Yeah.
So Adam had interest in running, and I believed in Adam. And I thought, what is the best for the neighborhood? And Adam had a lot of more experience than I had working with people downtown. I had none. I had community experience. I had private market experience, right? But downtown, I don't know. I probably hate downtown. It was a couple days a week where I'd be out there. I'd love to be in the community. That's where I'd be. What does that mean? I mean, today, the average downtown would be 50%.
So I'm open to a possibility like that.
But I need to hear and see and believe that the candidate, whoever it is, has the right vision and is the right person. So then, I'm going to keep pushing forward. Get a bit of this arrogance. I feel like I would do the job very well. Show me somebody who can do it better, and I'm very
pleased. I think you would do the job very well also. But I also think there's going to be other people trying to get you to do the job. It's going to be split. That's what I'm hoping. And I would like to try to find some kind of answer for it. All work together and come up with the right thing.
Good.
I'm really afraid, and that's not just, I mean, I know so many people here that have been in this neighborhood for so long. It's not, it's about the love of the neighborhood, and I think it would take really big people who have that kind of knowledge that could do that. But I don't know what to answer them. I think there must be some way that we could be stronger. And I was very excited when I first met you and Roxanne. Well, that table down on the trip. This is just like good. I mean, I was so impressed. We hadn't seen that in a long time.
Really?
We hadn't seen that.
Well, great.
We used to do those
kinds of things. That's great. I really love that, Roxanne.
And I thought, there, you know, table, and so. You continue. So you certainly have all the caliber. But how can we make it stronger so we don't lose?
Well, let's keep the conversation going forward. Aside from Lenny, I don't know if anyone who's announced yet other than this.
Troy has filed for D1.
Troy has filed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's keep the conversation open.
I think that would be very good to have both of you talking or somebody else, Miles, talk and bring out these things. So it's not about the person. I know Troy personally. I've worked with Troy. I like Troy. He's a great person. But I think other people need to meet together, be stronger. I'm not sure if Troy would win. I'm not sure. Split it, and then we all lose.
So, I completely concur with Rayanne. We can't have two good candidates running against them. We can't.
Well, first of all, I'm flattered that you said two good candidates.
What's that?
I'm flattered that you said that.
Yeah.
You said two good candidates, or however many good candidates. There was even talk when you ran, Ryan, about there were 10 candidates. We didn't have a bad incumbent. But it was like, you guys all have great spirit. Why can't you all work together?
Let me give you an example from that primary.
Mm-hmm.
Andre Pellequin, who got the second least amount of votes.
great that you admit that.
he got $80,000 to $90,000 worth of mailings given to him by developers, landlords. What if that $80,000 to $90,000 was, you know, what if all of us could have talked together and whittled out the
group? Although I have talked to Joe Dunn, and he said, well, you know, I had all the money. It didn't help. So there's something else that has to be pulled. Money is a big part.
Well, that's because Lenny was saying this is the old and the rich, and so they were trying to build a campaign against that. Well, that's not what it's about. The older, the richer people that made money and work on it, they've worked on it. They've given their sweat for that. And the younger people have the energy to do better.
We're not ranked choice voting, so we don't have to have two people run.
Yeah. I don't know if we can pull that off in time, but that's our
face. That's time to
continue.
Okay.
Let's develop
John,
this.
You had your hand up.
I was just going to ask, can you tell me how you distinguish yourself from Lenny as a candidate? What she stands for, the way she's going to be going at this as an incumbent, and what separates your vision, your philosophy from the way that she has been voting, and maybe to what people, why people are voting for her as incumbent.
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
And I've tried to reach out to many supporters in the neighborhood to ask them that question. Mm-hmm. I have trouble seeing it myself when I talk to them. This is, I feel like we should go even more because I didn't intend to like be a passion. That's not what we're doing. But you're asking a question, and the answer I do see some hesitation. So there's value in this conversation. I really don't understand myself. So appeal to that candidate. When I've talked to her, I don't know if it's the way I come off, you know. Adam tells me otherwise. I get a lot of feedback that I'm a very approachable guy, but I see a little twitch.
Twitch.
In the eye. Yeah, like, it's just on end. So, I don't, like, it's just an answer. Like, I don't know why. So I reached out. And I haven't got the feedback that is substantial. That is like, now I get it. Nothing has converted me to like understand, even if I was still looking out for it, nothing has converted me to put me in their shoes. I haven't gotten that. But as far as her, I'm going to see you, I was at a public event, he said,
"We love you, Lenny."
That's who I need to talk to.
Right.
So I'm doing that. Now, as far as the campaign and how she positions herself, she's very much this identity politics liberal, right? She's a queer woman of color, small business owner. These were the keywords she used, probably to attract some low information voters or voters who didn't have to get the liberty to invest any further. And that sounded correct, right? That sounds progressive. We're just going to go for that. I can say this. It's actually the same guy who gave me the 2D story. He voted. And his whole reasoning was that it was just something new. It wasn't Harry Austin. It wasn't the old guard. It wasn't the old remnants of whatever left was of the old Democratic machine in Chicago. We finally had a chance to kill that and start fresh. And that was his reason. He didn't care if it was Lenny or whoever, but he did see Joe Dunn as a consideration. So for him, pretty shallow, right? I don't mean to demean him, and he would probably agree. I think he would regret his vote. He's going to come today and support him. That's just one example.
It was a vote against the system.
It's a vote against the system.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people like that.
Of course, I think just
yeah, that's good. Yeah, let's keep the distinction. Stupid and ignorant. Ignorance doesn't isn't necessarily bad.
How can you distinguish yourself as against the system, but different than what Lenny's philosophy and what she's pushing for?
She is the
system. Yeah, the new system.
Wasn't she representing change? Because she was outside the box. She was representing change.
Yeah, that's right. It's difficult for me to answer, but I would say that it goes into my grant about progressivism. I do think that that is my care, genuinely in my heart. I've even got, like, can you hold that up? I do think it comes down to a lot of the visual appeal. This doesn't look like a normal campaign. This looks like a graphic designer did it. You look at Mondani's campaign.
Yeah.
It looks different. It feels different. And this campaign, if it remains on me, it needs to have that aesthetic of the approach. So that is very much one of the higher interests. The people who I have out canvassing for me, they need to feel different. And they don't, when you talk to them, they can't, oh, this is just, well, this is continuing old money, right? They can't feel like that.
Or it's continuing white guy dominance.
Oh, exactly.
What is it?
Continuing white guy dominance.
Yeah, there is right. Something about that, right?
Well, like, yeah, especially arguing all this.
Yeah.
Which is really wrong.
Right.
But we are doing well tonight.
Hi, Carl. Thanks for coming. How long have you been here?
Exactly.
I know. Good. I didn't want you to miss it.
Yeah.
Good.
So, I have met Justin and
Oh, yeah, I haven't looked at the demographics, actually, yes.
Say that
okay.
Diversity, not just in racial, but also age. I have learned that working with youth is huge. voices we follow, and how can they help us in the community. So my question to you is, how are you going to address that? Because your ideas are excellent. Couldn't be better. And I'm from Brazil, and one of the cities that I admire there is the city of Curitiba, that when an architect and urban planner took the job as a mayor of that city, we not consecutive terms, it transformed the city into an environmental incredible. So I really appreciate that.
So the question about the youth. So how, just because there's a talk often of investing in the younger voter, but often that refers to below 40. Are you actually talking to youth? You know, like below 25 or? Unless they want to tell their parents.
Would it be possible for you, who are strongly working with you, and Troy, the people that are strongly working with Troy, meet together and have a common sense conversation about this community, and have Joe Dunn come in and have people who and talk about it? And if you're the best, maybe that will come out. If she's the best, then it will come out. But those groups should be working together, and so we can all work together, and we'll get much more done fighting the
need. Do you have any answers on for Congress race about getting the younger code or even the youth code out? Carmen was, and I think she's right, that, you know, but I think that bringing the demographics is correct. The younger vote, you know, below 40, and then maybe the youth vote, below 30, you could say. I think that there's a lot of power there, and it is true, like, if you look at the incumbent's campaign, it's probably going to throw more for this group, so it's a targeted group. Yeah, my graphic design job is supposed to be speaking. It's my start. So I haven't answered you. I also want to open the question to everyone. We need to figure this out as a community. I agree. I don't have a straightforward answer for you right now. I'm going to talk to as many younger people as possible, but the younger people I'm talking to is not going to be
the same. They can't vote here. Most 18 to 30-year-olds.
I don't think that they're so young, though. I think it's more appropriate to speak to my younger people.
They're very transient.
Yeah, they're very. Well, and I can speak to that. Let me just say it, then Todd, I'll let you go.
I think since there's a reluctance for a lot of renters here to not want to get involved, it's very difficult to get people engaged in your local community.
I live in the Winthrop, again, studying the data, I live in the Winthrop-Kenmore corridor.
Personality.
And it's very much more transient culture, right? The people I live with in the building are not interested in politics, and local government, I would argue the opposite. In fact, at the last Emmanuel Temple meeting, I was there first day of Wednesday, the tenant association leader woman was also very interested in that. So I think that there is something about attracting a little bit younger voter to the best. But it is to say they're also active in my book, politically. So I wouldn't rule them out entirely.
Justin, you're young, and so you have that edge. When we were dealing with the zoning issue, I can't tell you, at least a handful of occasions, people have. And on one occasion, in that time, someone recognized me from. They were, I'm not giving this story, but two women rolled up, one in a private school, one in a divvy bike, and one of the divvy bike was leaning against our wrought iron fence. I had said, I'm sorry, we didn't call the bicycle tied to the fence. I said, what's up the main wall? I have a gate wall. She said, it's public. I said, no, the fence is private. The parkway is public. And she said, gave me a smart look. She said, well, I'm not going. And her partner then turned to me from the intercom and said, I know who you are and you're in trouble, because she saw me at a zoning meeting. She said, but it doesn't matter, you're old and you're going to die soon.
It's morbid.
And that was directed at me. But at other meetings I've had, we were at one of the coding meetings and someone was talking to the panel and said, I don't even know why you care. You're not gonna be, you're not gonna live long enough.
Mm-hmm. I've heard those.
So there is definitely a
ageism.
Yes, ageism is very significant. That's not gonna be something you have to worry about because you're not old and going to die soon.
In their words.
Yeah.
And, you know, to answer some of the questions, I didn't want to, like, slam myself to say to me, but I was hoping to return. It's just the energy I bring, and I'm dying my hair.
I don't know.
Dying my beard. My beard's a little bit. Whatever I have to do to look younger, have the right marketing, you know, that's what I was doing. But it is true, I'm not, like, old and confused, so there is some kind of thing.
If you want to take Lenny's step, she wouldn't say queer woman of color, even though she's not queer. If you want to go down and go to the cat, you could go as a trans man.
There's something about authenticity. But I hear what you're saying. I've considered it.
It's very strange. I mean, it's very strange that those triggers have an impact on some parts of my population. I do know that there's a lesbian in my building who advised me that a number of lesbians approach money and question around that because they were very upset with that.
Yeah, the gay thing or queer thing, I heard allergies.
Just remember 80% of households in America are same-sex people. So it's a really, really check that because the biggest demographic by the census. That's a huge demographic in the so. You have to find whatever it is that really those queer women and those gay men and the trans community really needs. I think Lenny's just saying that thing, but what is she doing other than trying to create safe space? And I think that's what she's doing. So
yeah.
That was my question.
Okay.
My question is related to your idea of, like, I think what's missing with our current elder. And I look at the Rom, the Grimoire Alliance, and many other things, and I look at Rich as well.
Oh, you do? Oh, thank you. Has
she
anyone
doesn't
else?
Want, she doesn't like to be challenged. She doesn't want the community to
exactly. Exactly.
But here's kind of what I think we could work with your campaign. It's important that you define what are the big ideas that you want to do in our community. And it's in two places. The job is downtown. On the job, you're voting on behalf of all Chicagoans downtown, including people in the 48th Ward. But then what do we need to do in our work? What are the big things that we have? I think we already know that. You just got to kind of maybe talk to your constituent groups and confirm them that, like, we want to preserve affordability, but the city's put something in place against that without any further planning. Right, that's the Broadway rezoning.
Right.
But you got to be careful because you don't want to be anti-development.
Right.
You're going to lose a bunch of voters. Right? And I would imagine maybe you reframe something like how do you preserve, how do you reduce displacement? Like how do you allow people to remain in Edgewater as the neighborhood change? Right? Environmental design, I'm glad to see that that's one of your big platform ideas. Like we have a lot of environmental issues. Lakefront, the parks, congestion, stormwater problems. I don't think any ward is thinking about that in a big way. We live on the lakefront, and it should be a mandate that we're thinking about what's going on in our lakefront. So I think finding those big issues, like what are they, and then using the 2.0 concept to say, here's where we solve it. It's how we look at people, not ethereal, not.
I need to ask. Have you read my?
I haven't really, because
after the feedback you gave me, I got very nice feedback on my narrative.
I framed everything in terms of my project. Perfect. Because I did a lot of project management, and they go also pretty natural for me, for a designer to think in terms of project. I was like, you know where you want to go, and you know what, yeah, steps you have to take. You throw feedback to me in order to reach the result. So what I'm trying to advise is staying with you.
I need to add on to what Todd is saying.
Okay.
There was a group of us that had met regarding planning for what was going on Granville. And we literally sat around the conference table and pleaded with her to develop a stakeholders group that she could sit down and listen to those people that were directly affected along Granville, Broadway, to Clark. And she flat out said, I do not work with your constituents of the ward, I work for the city. And that was the straw for me.
The matter is over.
I'm done.
Yeah, I would say that. I'll just add on to that, Justin, because we were part of it. I mean, that's really why many disbanded the Bryn Mawr Alliance.
Yep, exactly.
She got to a point where she no longer wanted to hear our ideas and our opposition to where she was going. And so we were a mechanism of a community to give her really concrete ideas on one thing, revitalizing Bryn Mawr. That's all we were trying to think about.
That was
we pulled up to solve all kinds of things, and she couldn't handle it.
Yep.
Couldn't handle the community feedback. So I think that that's a massive, important thing. You know, I don't know the early days of the Harry Osterman, of how much community feedback. I know we had his advisors in the community, so did Marianne Smith, and the other church, but the new way of doing that, what's the new way of doing that? What's the community network, and what's the actual network we have in our community? How do you pull that together to the advisory arm of your law office?
Well, one thing that bothered me when I saw the 5 or 6 years I've been in Edgewater is that, again, that complicated network and diagram overlapping on what responsibilities lie. I think a case in point is the fact that we have to enter our environmental school. Great, beautiful talent there, doing a lot of good work. And then we have a green council in downtown. What is the strategic? What are the overlap? I'm not actually really sure what it is. Should I get involved there or there? Do they compete against each other? That was what, for example, the Chamber of Commerce had about our Bryn Mawr Alliance.
Well, where is the talent? And go back to the talent method, because there are talent in both of those organizations that are not the one for the other.
Yeah.
You know there's talent in the EDC.
Yeah. So that really bothered me.
Safety affects everybody.
Okay.
If you go strong on safety, and we used to be one of the safest all of Chicago, and of course everything was down all over. But that's a big issue for younger, older, everything.
There probably is a distinction among some camps about how we address public safety. There's a big move among the current progressive 1.0. Mm-hmm. I don't know, we should be looking out for the criminals.
Yep.
You know, they just have the rates right. Ordinances.
Yeah, but there are people that rob or kick or slap or hit or hang on to town grant. And that hurts businesses. Can you imagine sitting at a restaurant and the woman out there is urinating on the sidewalk or whatever, and nobody will do anything about that? And what does it do to we'll get so many vacant places? So vacant safety helps the businesses and helps everybody in the neighborhood. So
I know Joseph down at AMP, might be speaking on his behalf, but there's that circle on Bryn Mawr, and he says one of the reasons his business is succeeding is because that activity turns people away.
Yes.
I get it. There's every morning, there's junk out there. It's just not an attractive place. And that's one of our main commercial corridors. It used to be the commercial corridor. So, yeah, that has to be addressed. I would probably start, I don't know what I would do and address that particularly, but I would probably start by going to Loyola, again, student resources, and see if there's any community or social workers.
Well, you know,
and would like some hands-on experience.
The alderman's office has control over the SSA. And the SSA, most of you know what the SSA is, all they do, so it comes out of the taxes of the business people.
Yeah.
And there is a certain portion of it, and this was the which is a member of your $660,000 taken in, and I'm talking 15 years ago. So they're taking in a lot of money. And at that time, we were able, to put cameras, we were able to have foot patrol and walk the streets,
yes.
Not always at the same place, but clearing it up. Harry got into it, but see, the alderman had the control to tell the chamber and the SSA where that money was going. The SSA don't want to do that now. SSA wants to play music on the streets on Friday night. You know,
it's a different story that we heard from plenty of the Groomar Alliance movement. Anyway.
The strength of safety is there.
Yeah, I agree. Safety is when I do the poll online, I put data from that. Public safety is number one. About everything else I've offered is not an option.
The alderman has the power to say, I want that money put on these things, safety or wherever they want it.
And I have done a lot of research more nationally about how other communities are handling public safety. And there's some good, in my opinion, some good stories coming out of Colorado about how they've transformed the police into more like community building type of unit. Integrates them more in the community. They're not some kind of outside paramilitary force coming in. They're more embedded, so more like beat cops and walking things like this. Adam, I kind of look at you if you're a police. And I would need to know, I need to do more research on this Castle. I know there's a big initiative there. I don't know if it's satisfactory. I want my own. Okay, you're shaking your head. There's an opportunity.
Always better.
Let's just say there's an opportunity, right? But I'm all about this. What in my booklet, Rand, you should take a look. I have police transformation is the word I'm using. We need to get it to a place where people are not rejecting police presence, first of all. Okay, good. You say right. And then they'll be appreciated when they're there. Because I think right now there is this move, also in this neighborhood, you know, ICE, police, there's just, we got to get over this negative stigma so that they're wanted with certain demographics.
Well, also, the subjects that you approach, the more the subjects you approach that affects people, the more votes you will get. And if we get, there's a lot of little things that will affect people, but other people, it's not a big movement, so they're not so anxious.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I mean, that's a tough job.
Yeah, I appreciate
but you're a smart guy.
I will keep putting it aside. I'm not sure.
I'll just piggybacking off this. So it sounds like what Lenny's done in progressivism 1.0 is, I think, kind of more what you're pointing to, where it's easier on crime, more understanding of, you know, what made them this way, what social circumstances brought them to, you know, do violence against other people. We should have, you know, bail reforms and all these type of things, right? You know, I take the blue line to work every day, and you know, that lady got set on fire, and it turns out the guy had, you know, I think it's like 20 priors.
Yep.
This was like the progressivism, you know, idea, the whole defund the police thing that we all lived through in 2020, and we've seen a resurgence of violence. So can you speak to, I know you mentioned CAPS a little bit, and that sounds similar to the, like, you know, having, you know, social workers instead of policemen come out. How do you distinguish your movement towards, you know, where it is about safety and about making the public
safe? I've actually thought a lot about
that.
There is this big movement to defund the police and give that money into 311 calls or more.
Yeah.
City entity that is more trained in public management, like the crisis response team that CPD is experimenting with in the neighborhoods, I would not defund the police.
Okay.
First of all, yeah, I agree. I would, if anything, invest in them.
Okay.
But again, they need to change their role, and they need to change the public opinion for that to work. Otherwise, it's going to
change. Their training has to change.
Yeah, their training has to change. And the metrics that are used to qualify successful outcomes probably need to be worse. Again, Adam, I feel like right now, the reason I turned to you is I feel like I'm speaking like outside my expertise area, yours and the CPD, but my feeling is that the metrics, the way we look at success, the police and these. Yes? Or?
Yeah, I think that we're also under a consent decree in Chicago for some of the prior incidents and misconduct cases, so
yeah.
I think internally, I'll speak as Adam, not as the police, a civilian police department, I think the police department has like everybody else, try to understand, you know, that OBCC is important, but the way that it has been going on has not been what everybody wants. And I think de-escalation, crisis intervention, you know, that's kind of the direction the police department is going. But it doesn't stop people from getting put on fire on the train. You know, like it is bigger than that. It is bigger than just sending out crisis workers. I can think through maybe a situation, both in Conway's office and in Harry's office, where we had called, I won't say their name, but a resource to come out and try and de-escalate somebody who was going through a mental health crisis. This person was 6'6 and like 300 pounds. And I didn't feel comfortable even engaging. But there were some counselors who were very small individuals who were trying to do what they were trained to do and de-escalate. In some cases, you cannot de-escalate. You know, somebody is going through their own reality. De-escalation sometimes has to be done with a police officer present or someone who can stop the threat if it happens. And I think when we talk about public safety, it's always been police reform. Can you reform the police to be more thoughtful, be more in tune with maybe some of the social aspects? But I definitely think that maybe in the previous election, public safety kind of that time was, you know, the police are triggering people, right? And depending on who you talk to, right? Some people have experiences with them that trigger them. Some people are just told that police are triggering and voting for them. And so I think that's kind of what maybe the voting demographic distinction and divisiveness might come down to that conversation too, right?
Yeah.
Race and all these other things play into it. But
I've had some good conversations with CAPS meetings with officers. Some of them have given me some feedback that I want to give to CAPS or keep being more general.
And Adam, I have to tell you, in front of everyone, they've not been very receptive. If I was alderman, maybe they're receptive. If I was mayor, maybe they're receptive. But I've sat down with the sergeant, Sergeant Saylor, in the 20th district, and it was a cordial conversation. It wasn't like what we have.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, okay, now we're really being honest with each other and making some headway and things are going to change after this meeting.
Right.
I felt like nothing was going
to be honest.
So we need to get over that. We need to have conversations that are meaningful.
Anecdotally.
Just coming back, because I just look at this awesome stuff. I feel that you both, all of the students have parents, and they're trying to
safety.
Right, and safety and sustainability with the will become in the future.
Yes.
So I believe that reaching out to schools, doing events with them, or talking about, let's say, recycling and say, do an experiment with children, their parents would come, and all those mothers that are not here will be there. And you would reach out to them. I'd like to come back to somebody, but I think she's saying if you're saying that you need to reach out to the people who are in their 30s and their 40s, the way to reach out to those people is to help their children get their attention.
That's
is that what you said? And organize team things that they can do, keep the kids off the street. And as soon as you're helping their children, you got those parents on your side.
I just want to say, the anecdote that happened when the economy got funky in 2009, it happened to be in the upper range of their building, which is a part of one, around the corner from us. And I contacted the 20th, and I got the benefit of the TAC unit, gave his cell number, and he said, call me anytime you see
him. Okay.
Communication these days with the police is not good. If you call the front desk and you bring up a problem, they'll say, that's above my pay rate. Pay scale. And then but they don't say, but let me, there's the problem solving. It's like, this is the level I'm at, and I can't take you anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I've attempted to have a sit down or a conversation with the commander. Can't do it. I witnessed something back in the early 90s where a cop took on a mental patient physically. And I called the downtown office and I said, I just witnessed something. If this officer had shot him, he would have been justified, and he got dinged up, handled this guy. And in response, I got to get out of jail from the superintendent of the police back then, enforcing their house. No, but there, I think today there is not the communication. And I'm also, part of the problem is 911 system is a citywide system. Nobody you call has any sense of the neighborhood.
Yeah,
if you call from the lake and you say, there's something's going on, if you exit Bryn Mawr, the drive at Bryn Mawr and go to the lake, they'll say, what's the address? And there is no address. And they'll reference light poles. So the light pole is not where the person is observing what's going on. This happens all the time. I mean, I'm very involved, and it's disturbing to me, the communication system.
What you're saying is...
I'll take your feedback.
But it's true what Steve is saying. I do often feel like my engagements with those officers, even sergeant, even that one. I don't know about the management. It just feels like, well, this is my job. It's like this. It's too silent.
When you,
it's like what Steve said. You need to be thinking this is a system, right? And you
feel
hiding in their role.
I will say, working there as a civilian as well, I do know how to kids from who you speak. The culture of it has become a little bit more, I was told, I can't do anything other than this, so I'm going to do this, and I'm not going to be gay because I'm afraid I'll get in trouble. So I think in their mind, it is a reaction to societal changes. And so they say, you know what, you're right, we're not going to do that. So we're just not going to do any of it. And I think that is still a conversation.
Yeah, the new mantra has to be problem solving.
Exactly.
Same feedback. Whoever you can give. I know you're fine, right? There's only 10 minutes left. I'm going to let Brian go, then I'm going
to
close down. Okay?
I want to follow on with what Norm said.
Yeah.
That was the exact same thing when it came to the upzoning, the same thing when it came to turning over the armory. There was no public dialogue like this.
It was those silly
post-it notes. Nobody could talk. I mean, it wasn't this kind of open conversation. And the same thing when she turned the armory over. We got no say in it. We could have had big community meetings at the armory.
And that agreement was for 6 months. And had we not pushed, well, that would still be there.
Right. Yeah, right. Probably would have. Yeah, I mean, we don't know, but yeah, you're right.
We could have had large,
from the mayor.
We could have had large-scale community meetings at the armory about upzoning or about turning over the armory to the city. For migrants. Well, nothing. We got nothing.
Our excellent opportunity was the first thing.
Yes, 100%.
And I think the good leader would recognize when those opportunities come up. Yeah, we want to. So anyway, I want to close that. We have like 10 minutes. We're free to say maybe, I don't know, what more of your schedule is. But you beat the cats.
Yeah.
We should talk a bit more, but officially we'll wrap this up by 2 o'clock. So,
I want to catch up. Hey, Justin, one thing I didn't mention, and I think it's really important, especially I think it affects affordability, is that the quality of tenancy, and that is private equity. Investment in large stock buildings around our area and also up in Rutgers. This building was owned by Ray and Bob, and they were affordable building renters. They took good care of the building, and they had reasonable rent.
Because they were hands-on and you were
And they
present.
Were hands-on and they were
That's
and
they the difference.
Had tenants had a quota.
Yeah, sure.
Now, I just had Saturday night a couple of girls, most likely Loyola, either moving in or moving out, but they parked alongside my parking in the back. All I've got is a simple chain with a padlock. Somebody went on, and I've got it on camera, I'm going to pull the cam fill. They go in the center of it, put all the weight on, and then walk one side and stretch it out, walk the other side and stretch it out. So now it's about that far from the ground. Then also, I can't get my damn padlock to it. So I'm just saying the behavior of these many people. They're not all that way. I know very wonderful young people with etiquette and personality communicate to us, and there's a lot of them that just walk by, whether you say anything to them or not.
Yeah.
So that is my observation. And this has happened on an increasing level. And then, when the other units, large units, aren't rented, then we get Section 8 cities. And that's no fun either. Not always. Some are good, some are not. And sometimes they get a bad one in. And we got a guy with a barbecue bin out there on their parking lot doing barbecue or alongside their building in the alley, and all the vines burn up on the side of the building.
The flame went up here.
Okay.
So anyway, I know that. That's just a little vent for me.
Yeah.
Because so I think it's private equity has an issue because there's no on-site management on any of the buildings. That's his building. This is his building brought down on two sides, and there's two more across the street.
What I can say about that is on both sides of the political divide in the neighborhood, everybody hates Pacoma. that is something I have.
That's and private equity. I think they have responsibility.
The Lenny supporters also don't.
They have responsibility that they're not doing.
Could they? Or could they not? The private equity?
I haven't researched that.
That needs to be done immediately. It's Pacoma conversely. It is a family name. Maybe they get to know the trucks of some vehicles.
Well, I've already talked with Norm.
That would be one of my first dialogues with Alvin. Just go walk in that office and find out what I'm dealing with, first of all.
So,
but I don't have the answer to
the question that something's happened in this area right here. I think in many areas.
So, I'm going to close it out now. But thanks for all the contributions. I know it's early
in the campaign season, but this would be correct if I didn't end with this note about how I want to see the campaign go from here, right?
And it needs to be a very visual campaign. We've already talked about the branding, the booklets, and so forth. I want to be out on the streets with flyers that represent the values that I'm going to champion. I need an excuse to walk up to somebody and start talking to them. I need to figure out how to work around that situation. But I need some material to go hand to them. Very visual, very youthfully oriented in design. I need some shirts. I need some buttons. So when we're out volunteering for beach stewardship cleanups, when we're out volunteering at Veggwater, and while we're doing just general street cleanups, all in uniform, there's a visual presence there, and it shows the work is already being done that needs to be done. Very visual campaign, right? The idea I have for a campaign office actually comes from you, Jason.
Okay.
Yeah, do you remember we were talking about a co-working space?
Yeah, like a convergence of minds.
So awesome. So instead of just a campaign office, this is where people, creatives, are welcome to just come. Maybe you're working on a site community project. Maybe it's not for the campaign. But that would be very valuable for us to know about, right? And the campaign. Support them, they can support us. Any little grassroots effort that's happening, some kind of creative, I don't know. You were talking about something with the library, right? Some kind of book exchange or something like that you were going to help out with. Stuff like that would be awesome. Those conversations that happen within the sphere of the campaign. I would very much support a co-working that exists in the Maybe have printers, computers, people who come along and use them.
Is Bunny going to have a space in that corner?
Somebody joked, maybe she's coming. You know what? She can come in. It's fine. Go ahead. So, and eventually, I think the biggest challenge that I will have with my campaign is money and visibility. I would need some money to make sure I'm very visible. I'm going to need some billboards. I remember Lenny had Green Archer Grocers. All of her right there at the corner of Bridge, Broadway, and Grimlock. It was all plastered with her identity.
You know why that guy did that for her?
I do. It's going to take some money to
win. There's a story there?
To win a campaign. Yeah, but not for now, because I'm trying to close out.
It's a story there.
So, if anyone feels that this campaign at this early stage is worth investing in so that I can get those flyers made, so I can start having conversations with people. There are cue cards over there where you can make a campaign donation. $25 will help give me those flyers.
$50 would help get me the shirts. $100 will help maintain website costs or something like that. If we're feeling really ambitious, $500,000 will go towards that billboard, that campaign office, something like that. But for me, it's all about being able to have an excuse to talk to the neighbors about the good values that you can offer. So that sounds like good. Dale, you haven't said anything. You can close this out.
I really love your idea of bringing people together. And I have done dialogue workshops to make some experiences here in Chicago. So, and I have several ones. I have tired some of these. And so what I'm thinking is I might play with the idea of workshop budget, and I would be in big space, and three people, you know, I know how to do it so well, but I would have some of my colleagues do it. So my background for that is in a psych major.
This raises an interesting point. Yeah, if anybody knows if opportunities happening where I can come and volunteer, I'm very open to that. I mentioned a lot of cleanup events, but if they're conversations, I'm very happy to make those arrangements. And then finally, volunteers. I think the volunteers are important. I'd be happy to hear of interest, but I think also that would lean on the money. How can I supply these volunteers with the stuff they would need to do a successful job? So if you are, I have a handful of volunteers now out on the streets talking campaign, but if there's anybody else that's interested or knows anyone who's interested, let's go. Okay?
Yeah.
Is that a good close? That's appropriate,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.